billions of dollars. House Democrat Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, whose state is slotted to add $750 million to the state deficit if they don't receive the funding, said the money is crucial for the states and for the disability community.
This mania about deficit cutting right now is dangerous. It's dangerous to people's lives, and it's also dangerous to economic recovery.
Medicaid funding was included in the bill to extend unemployment benefits, but Republican objections resulted in the state aid being dropped from the bill. Democrats hope to pass Medicaid assistance by August. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
A group of African American employees of Southern California Edison have filed a class action lawsuit against the company, claiming racial discrimination in pay, advancement, and harassment. The suit alleges Edison has refused to incorporate previous federal consent decrees in 1974 and 1994 in order to change a racist management culture. FSRN's Dan Fritz has the story.
In front of the Los Angeles County Courthouse, attorney Charles Matthews and African-American employees of Southern California Edison told reporters that a racist mindset persists in Edison management, despite lawsuits and consent decrees going back to the 70s.
They were supposed to implement something called a career development program. The purpose was to assure equal employment opportunities, including career advancement opportunities for African Americans in a manner consistent with the goals and purposes of this decree and for all other employees. And that was never done. It was just not implemented. And to the extent that they claimed that it was done, look at the results. The employee population, African American population, has shrunk by approximately 40% since the ink was dry on this thing.
The current lawsuit also includes some African Americans who applied and were denied jobs. Matthews claims his clients still encounter a glass ceiling that was identified in a 1974 lawsuit, which prevents them from getting promotions, bonuses, and equal pay, as well as performance appraisals.
I mean, it may be an economic decision on Edison's part, or it may be just racial bias at the top levels of this company that is seeping on down.
Security specialist Joan Greer is one of the named plaintiffs who claims she was harassed after a less competent white employee was promoted to be her supervisor.
If I asked for a vacation day off, he would say I have to give him like 20 days notice when the actual rule was like 5 days, if at all existent, because they didn't use it anymore. If I called in sick, I would get harassed for that, even if I had a doctor's excuse.
In addition to claims of harassment and a glass ceiling, the plaintiffs say a mindset of discrimination pervades the company management. Michael Hoskins, who has worked in corporate security for Southern California Edison for over 20 years, says company officials would make racially insensitive remarks in front of employees.
Our former director in security, former FBI agent, discussed in our staff meeting that we work for the Grand Dragons, and he was alluding to the executives on the fourth floor of Southern California Edison. This would kind of spearheaded this whole discrimination to file a class action because of these kind of statements. Well, Grand Dragon is associated with the Ku Klux Klan.
It sounds ridiculous, but 26 people heard him do it, and he did it twice. That's the mindset.
Matthew says his clients want Edison to fix the problem and pay civil penalties.
As to a specific amount, no, I can't give you one, but it should be an amount that stings this company and hurts them, because it's the only way this company and other companies get the message that there is not economic profit in being a racist organization.
An Edison spokesperson would not comment on the pending litigation. Dan Fritz, FSRN, Los Angeles.
Before we end, a correction. On Tuesday, we mistakenly reported that legislation to extend unemployment insurance had passed in the Senate. Senate vote cloture, which overcomes the Republican, but that's not quite the same as passage. Final passage is expected soon. And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Washington, D.C. editor was Leanne Caldwell. Today's technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Scott Pham and Antonio Ortiz. Our intern is Neela Smith-Dorfman. FSRN is a worker-run collective. Major funding comes from the Pacifica Foundation, community radio stations nationwide, and individual donors. You can visit us online at fsrn.org. You can send questions, comments, or news tips to comments@fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Doran Marina.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
I don't even know where to begin. This is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. We have no less than 19 people in the studio. Everyone say hello at once.
Oh, hi!
Wow. You know what? Okay, wait. As long as we have so many people in the studio, why don't we all do a legal ID at the same time, because we'll never get this opportunity again. Now, here's how it goes. We're all going to say WBAI New York when I say go.
WBAI New York!
All right, let's try that again, because you gotta get it just right. You gotta get it.
We need a countdown.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah,
okay.
You can't just say go and expect to.
Right.
All
right.
No,
you're right. You're right. I haven't done this before either.
Do we say on the one or the go?
Well, if I say 3, 2, 1.
Go.
No, there's no go. The one is the go. You don't need another go. And Bernie, you're on the phone, right?
Yes, but I'm afraid that I'll be delayed because of the cellular delay.
All right, we'll just say that's why you're delayed. just kidding. And I'm not going to say it either because people don't want to hear my voice. 3, 2, 1.
Go. WBAI New York.
Voltaire, why did you say go? You ruined the whole thing. Now we're going to do it again. Not say go.
Well, you can say go.
No one's going to. All right, you know what? I'll say go just to make you happy, all right? After go, then we're going to say it. And this is the last time. We messed this up. We've blown it for another.
After go or on go?
You're going to be on go in a second. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
WBAI New York.
Okay, did somebody get New York wrong? Sounded like somebody said something else. Okay, whatever. We'll make that work. We'll splice it together. Greetings, folks. This is the Post-Hope Show. We've lost all hope, and here we are. basically, the post-mortem after the next hope, which took place this weekend. If you weren't there, you missed it.
You can tell we're all still a bit loopy.
Mm-hmm. Speak for yourself. That's Mike. That's the voice of Mike there, who is the loopiest one here.
I try to be, but this week I got some competition.
And Jim, welcome.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Hi.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Gus.
Oh, hi.
And Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Loopier than ever.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone else, I'm going to ask to come up to the mic and introduce themselves, because there's just too damn many of you. Starting here.
Tech Darko.
All right. You all got to move up to the microphones, otherwise there's no way we're going to hear you. Go ahead.
Big A from Vancouver, Canada.
Wow.
Mitch from San Francisco.
You got to move faster than this.
John Harlocker, known as the Trash Guy.
The Trash Guy.
Dot Rhett.
Dot Rhett, yes.
Cable Flame.
Come on.
Lexicon!
No shouting.
Alessio from Italy.
All right.
Kyle from Seattle.
Cosmic Lint, also from Vancouver.
All right. Who are you over there?
Fiber Optic from Queens.
Yay. Really? Whoa. I haven't heard that voice over the airways in a while. Is anybody else? That's all? Okay. Well, that's not everybody spoke, but that's a lot of people. We all were at the Next Hope, and it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. It was educational and very tiring. I can't even... I'm still recovering. I don't know if anyone here is completely recovered, but... Have you really? You got enough sleep? You're all. Here, more people are showing up. I see through the closed circuit television. We have three more people, so we'll be over 20. There's, oh wow, this is going to be something.
Walter, I have to ask, what's your secret? Since I'm not.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is recovered. Okay, now we're going to ask these three people. Come on in, three people. You identify yourselves immediately. Go ahead. Who are you?
Hey, Emmanuel. This is Nick Farr.
You're Nick Farr.
Yes, I'm Nick Farr. I'm the real Nick Farr, and I'm the only one standing up.
We've only spoken through through third parties before. We've never met face to face, so this is interesting.
You can tell it's Nick Farr because he's wearing a suit.
Yeah.
The only one in New York wearing a suit.
The only one on Wall Street, especially.
Yeah, especially on Wall Street. There was nobody else. I was very disappointed in New York.
Anyone
but
else
it's
cared
finally nice to meet you face
it
to
face. It is finally nice to meet you, too. And let me shake your hand there. Great. who's that?
Hello, it's Red Hacked.
Red Hacked. You're
as
a regular.
Usual.
You have a BP shirt on.
Well, sort of.
All right. Well, good for you. And anyone else care to introduce themselves, or are we shy? Come on, let's say who you are.
I'm Caitlin Sherman. I'm Nick Farr's girlfriend.
Oh, and where are you from? Nick is blushing a deep beet red now.
I currently hail from Jersey City.
Beautiful place. And I mean it. You got the big clock there. So isn't that... You don't know about that? It's, well, I guess because it's facing away from you, but it's facing New York City. And we look at that all the time because we don't know what's going on usually. Okay, especially now we don't know what's going on because it's the Wednesday afterwards. Now, Monday after a Hope is always lost, at least to me it is.
There was Monday?
Yeah, usually we sleep through it. And in my case, I was driving through it, going out to the island, getting trucks, coming back, that kind of thing. Loads of fun, and even now, it's kind of like jet lag. You don't know when you're supposed to wake up or go to sleep, but the point is the conference was really incredible. We did a lot of fun things. We did a lot of things we've done before, new things, and I've heard almost unanimous praise from the attendees. Does anyone want to start and talk about some of the things that happened? That Red Hack, you're raising your hand, but you're also really far from a microphone. So, yeah, go up to one and tell us what.
Hello. Yes. I wanted to start because what I wanted to talk about started people's experience to the conference.
Uh-huh.
You know, we did the registration electronically this year, and we didn't know if it was going to work. I mean, we knew.
What do you mean you didn't know it was going to work? We told me it was going to work.
We knew that it would function, but we didn't really know what to expect in terms of what the attendees would do if they would, you know, follow directions and bring their tickets and such. And it worked out really well.
Yeah, easy directions to follow. Bring your ticket.
Well, you know,
but
never know.
But people didn't. Some people didn't.
Some people wanted to, you know, have it on their cell phone and stuff. And of course, we'd planned ahead of time and accounted for those people. And you know, it went really quickly. I think that. Mike was working with me there, and June's and Megan.
Got pretty hairy sometimes. There were long lines.
There were long lines.
They went quickly, but there were a lot of people.
Yeah, that was only really on the first day, on Friday, were the real long lines in the morning, obviously, because most people want to show up for all 3 days. And but, yeah, I think we worked through it pretty quickly. There was only one bit of shouting where somebody was taking too long and people behind them were aggravated. But that really only happened once, so I think it went pretty well. I think, you know, I definitely plan on repeating it for the next conference that I work on registration for. So.
Yeah, well, it was a great move into the present day, I guess, from the antiquated system we used to have, where we'd mail everything out through U.S. Postal Service.
And again, I'd like to thank Aldert and the HXX Foundation for lending us the barcode scanners.
Mm-hmm.
We could have bought barcode scanners, but free is always better than money. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'd thank them more if they showed up.
Well, yeah, that's true. I didn't see very many Dutch people around. But
what was up with that? A lot of Dutch people had other plans.
There were a couple Dutch people there, but all the Dutch people who I know didn't show up.
Yeah, the ones we know, and that's kind of strange. A lot of Germans too. A lot of
Germans,
people from
yes,
all over the place.
I think we tried our best though to be stern like Aldert and really stand in for him despite his absence.
Mm-hmm. Walter,
no, I just can make another Aldert joke about him being stern, but
Okay, but you're not going to. Yeah. I got Gus.
I have to say, Mike and Mark and Junts spent the vast majority of their time down there. I guess Junts went to his first talk of a hope ever, this conference?
Something like that.
Something like that?
Junts was allowed to leave registration.
Well, I wasn't told about this. What I don't understand is, like, there's these people who just come and they're like, I'm just going to do registration, and they do it, and they're absolutely integral to the conference, and yet they do not get to enjoy its delightful fruits.
We enjoyed the conference sitting at registration. It's fun. You get to mock people who don't follow directions.
And you guys were doing some soldering. People brought you down some soldering irons to work on your badges for a while.
Yeah, I did some soldering down by the registration desk. That's true.
Let's talk about the badges. Now, I'm wearing one. Is anyone else wearing their badge? Am I the only geek wearing a badge?
Yes, you are.
It's not flashing. Why isn't it flashing?
You worked it.
Have you tried turning it off then on? Because that does help. It does help.
It doesn't help with you.
People don't believe it, but it does help.
It's true. Also plugging it in.
All right. Well, it's
battery powered. See, you can repair it with a key, but only Red Hack knows how.
Thank you. Please take care of my badge. It's been all different colors. It's been red, there it's been green, it's been blue, and now it's green and flashing red. So that's cool. Thank you, Red Hack. Did anybody do anything really neat with their badge?
I made mine blue all the time. Yay!
All right. Well, you know, I was hoping for something a little bit more sophisticated than that.
I like LEDs.
I didn't actually do the hack myself, but I was talking with some folks at NYC Resistor, and they had came up with a hack, which is posted on their blog at nycresistor.com. And basically what it was that if you touched the button part of the badge, if you will, it would listen, because they could. The badges function as both transmitters and receivers, so it would listen for the next packet sent by somebody else's badge, and then copy it and repeat it over and over again. So basically, it allowed you to clone other people's badges with your own badge. So the idea, obviously, behind the badge was that it was sending out an identifier that identified you as unique, but now you could go and copy other people, and so now the same ID might show up in multiple rooms, and who knows what kinds of problems that caused for the AMD people, but it was kind of cool.
People were having fun with these things. I was too busy to actually play with mine, but I saw lots of people doing fun things. Alessio from Italy.
It was my second hope this time, and the last edition I had some problem with that badge that was flashing because I leave the battery on. And in London, police was asking me why I have in my bag something that was flashing. It was really difficult to explain them.
Uh-huh. But you went to London with something flashing? You should know it's against the rules there.
Yeah.
In fact, this time I will remember to take off the battery.
Yeah, so...
If you, just a public service announcement, if you are going to or live in Boston, take the battery out.
And maybe don't leave it lying around in a public space and where people might overreact.
We're not responsible for what happens otherwise.
Bernie, tell us something about your memories of the conference.
Well, it's kind of a blur still, but it was. I have to really say, in all sincerity, it was the best hope ever. And that may be exceeded next time, but everything seemed to run more smoothly than previous hopes. Everybody seemed to have a fantastic time. We had a ton of people there. There was so much good material, so many good talks, and it was just an incredible blast, and I was so glad to be part of it.
Yeah, and everybody in this room played a major role in making it all happen, and I think that's a testament to the spirit of volunteerism and just creativity. We do something that very few are able to do, and we're lucky to have the opportunity to do this. I think we're inspired a lot by the European conferences. Next year it'll be CCC camp. Last year it was HAR. Of course, the CCC Congress every winter. We learn things from this. And yeah, you mentioned the talks. Anyone have any favorite talks they'd like to discuss, something they saw? Gus?
There was a really great talk on the economy of malware, where this guy had gone through basically a bunch of Russian forums and translated them and figured out how much it took to rent a botnet, how much it took to own your own botnet, buying credit cards, things like that. And he just did this great economic analysis. It was just like this beautiful overview of, you know, what we know about that industry. And that was really edifying.
We can't get the price of the malware out on the air, but if you go on the website, you can find out. They're very affordable compared to other malware.
Oh, that's a true bargain. Mitch, Nick, you want to talk about the hacker spaces and the hardware hacking area? Tell us how that went.
Yeah, so me and Nick set up the Hackerspace Village The center of which was the hardware hacking area that I set up with the help of a lot of other people. There were hackerspaces represented from all over the world, and it was a temporary meta hackerspace that was going on for the duration of the conference. So everyone could come by and be part of the community and make stuff, hang out, learn, share, and teach. Just like a hackerspace, you know, the hackerspaces are popping up all over the world. And people at the Next Hope had a little taste of what it could be like if they were at their own hackerspace, either one that exists or one that they're going to start.
Nick, how about you?
I think it's a sign of how powerful the Hope Conference is. Just 2 years ago, we introduced hackerspaces.org to everybody in the U.S. and told them their excuses were invalid and to go out and build hackerspaces. The Hackerspace Village was to the left of the escalators last year, and you know, there were a couple of hackerspaces by then. It had only been a little while since the first Hackers on a Plane. And there was a lot of activity. There was a lot of buzz. It was nice. We moved into the much larger area where the hammocks were last year. And, Mitch, you tell me, but I think, you know, by the time we were halfway through Friday, it was clear that the Hackerspace Village had already outgrown their doubling in space.
Yeah, it was really amazing because Friday when the conference first started, I'm looking, there's just a few people hanging out there, and I was wondering, is this a huge space that's a waste, and is this going to be used? But yeah, by Friday night, it was mobbed, and there was no way to get to the tools without waiting for a while, because everyone wanted to make things and hang out and see what projects people were working on, and to talk with people from various hackerspaces. You know, 2 years ago, there were something like 50 hackerspaces in the world, and now there's hundreds and more forming all the time. And I don't know how many were represented at the Hackerspace Village, but there were at least 50.
Wow. And from how many parts of the world?
Mostly from the U.S., but there were one MetaLab from Vienna was there. There were people there from various CCCs in Germany. And God, my brain is still not at high capacity.
That's totally understandable. I'd really be curious to know how they saw Hope. People from Europe, people from Germany, and various other countries, how they compare it to things that happen over there. I'm interested in that feedback.
This applies directly to what I was working on for most of the conference. But they said, "Oh, you finally got around to implementing our Angel system."
Yes, tell us about the Angel system.
Well, we didn't do a straight, faithful implementation of their Angel system, which they use to manage volunteers and volunteer positions. But one of the changes that I tried to bring to the conference this year was to have a better organizational structure around both recruiting and applying volunteer labor. We started off earlier, I think, than most years in trying to get people to pre-register and email in saying they were going to volunteer and telling us what they were interested in and trying to get them scheduled in advance of the conference instead of just setting up a table and hoping people would show up. And I think it worked out really, really well. A couple other things we tried to do, which were straight from the chaos, the CCC game plan, was to track volunteer hours and make it very public how many hours people had worked. On top of that, implementing a minimum number of hours worked to get a t-shirt and providing a lot more incentives to have people available. A lot of people really want to volunteer, but I think what happens a lot of times in conferences is they don't know where they're going to be most useful. They don't know how to sort of take care of things. A lot of times volunteers are just asked to sit at a position for a really long time, which is a boring job, especially if you're a volunteer. So another thing we try to do is to make sure that each position that we had available involved a little bit of walking around, checking in with people, meeting with people. Mitch, you mentioned on the list that you were happy that volunteers came around to the Hackerspace Village every so often.
Yeah, it was great. There were volunteers coming to help make things run smoothly because there was me and Jimmy, and there were a few volunteers who were there from the beginning, Constantine and other people that just came to the Hackerspace Village and saw what was going on, and they wanted to help, like Mary. She was amazing. She helped so many people build their badges and hack their badges, which which is not a beginner's project, and many beginners succeeded because of her and Constantine. But having a stream of volunteers continually come by was so wonderful and remind me and many other people to drink water. But I heard from other people throughout the conference that they're really happy that there was a stream of volunteers available, and that's what helped make their area successful. So good job.
Just one final thing I wanted to mention. We had two volunteer coordinators this year. It was me and Lindsay, who I think is a little bit more microphone shy, but she did a lot of work behind the scenes, and having two people, one always on shift at any time throughout the conference, I think was one of the reasons everybody's saying it moved much more smoothly.
Yeah, you both did a phenomenal job, and you were always present one way or another. I'm not sure how you did it, but it made all the difference. You're the face to all these people that come to us and stick around afterwards, because you meet so many cool people at all these conferences that we stay in touch with for years. Alessio?
From my point of view, I go as a speaker to a lot of conferences, and I meet a lot of you of Hackerspaces all around. And the thing, as an external witness, I really appreciate is that there is a lot of people all around the world that is doing a lot of job, a great job that, in my opinion, is very appreciated by the community. In fact, the incredible thing is, for example, you are in Germany and Nick goes around and everything refers as him, as a member of the CCC. And when German people is here in New York, even New Yorkers refers to them as our local. So this organization is very worldwide and well working, and I really like it.
It's a global community for sure. Yeah, you mentioned jobs that are appreciated, and I think no job was more appreciated than what our friend John Harlicker had to do all weekend long. John, tell us how challenging it was to keep things clean. We had you were in charge of trash removal and keeping the bathrooms sanitary.
Yes.
But I should also point out that you are, in fact, the director of Urchin, the movie that came out a few years ago that I happen to be in, and Fiber here is in, and a bunch of other people. You're an extremely talented individual, and yet, here, I think it speaks to the fact that we're all willing to literally get our hands dirty to make something work.
Well, I directed Urchin. I've also directed some stage stuff, and I produced some other films. But I enjoy doing manual labor a couple times a year. I do. I like it. It's, you know, when you work with your brain, you can be clever and not thorough. You know what I mean? Like, you can get away with being clever and not having to do the deep work. Mm-hmm. So when you do something like taking out trash or keeping the bathrooms from stinking, there's nothing smart about it. You just have to, there's little clever things maybe you could do, but most of it is just actually doing it. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind doing that a couple times a year. And I like this community a lot, although I'm not really a part of it. My partner in my film company is the guy who does the covers for 2600, and we were able to cast Emmanuel and Fiber in that film, Urchin, which any of you can torrent with my blessing.
We both got killed in that, right?
Fiber, yeah, they got killed pretty spectacularly.
I got killed in the bathroom.
You got killed by a flying laptop.
You got killed by a flying laptop. I got killed by a kid in the, in the bathroom.
With an electric fork.
Yeah.
He electrocutes him to death.
Yeah. I drew real blood, though, in that scene.
You did.
Yeah, you didn't use that part of it, but
no, because you got so into being killed that you destroyed a new sink.
Well, I believe.
And we had to fix it quickly to keep us from being thrown out of the venue.
I just fell onto it. It wasn't my fault, but I believe in pouring myself into a scene, and that's what I did. But tell us something about the filmmaking, and are you working on new projects?
Oh yeah, I mean we're really interested in new technology. There's a new camera out called a RED, which shoots some amazingly large images that you have to break down into high definition images, and we're working a lot with effects projects with those. And we have a new project. I'm shooting a film in this in August up in Maine, a horror film called Shush or Die, which involves Stephen King. Uh-huh. And we are shooting on high def there, but the next project after that will definitely be RED. And if you have something to say about RED, I'd be interested in hearing. I'm learning about it.
Kyle here is nodding vigorously when you mentioned RED. I have no idea what this RED is of which you speak.
The RED camera project is it's basically their tagline is they want to make obsolescence obsolete. And basically it's like an upgradable like camera kit you buy into, and then they're releasing this new CCD or this chip called the Mysterium, and it's actually out now. And it's the kind of thing where like early adopters can get involved. And basically, mm-hmm. this is higher resolution than HD. And I've worked a lot with HD and nonlinear editing and that kind of thing. And it's a very, very cool platform. And they're sort of, they sell you all the parts and pieces to it. So it is sort of like in-house and you deal with just Red. But it's an amazing platform.
I've noticed that so many hackers are into photography as well. Why do you think that is?
I think there's a lot of information that can be conveyed in a picture, and I think hackers enjoy that. You know, it's a huge medium for communicating.
Is that the same as 4K, or is that something different?
It does shoot 4K, but that's not where it's stopping. The next one coming out will shoot 7K.
It down converts to that kind of stuff.
It has to down convert to 1080 lines of resolution to be viewable by anyone. There's like one projector that's out, but no one has it.
Rob T. Firefly.
I think another parallel between photographers and hackers is I know these photographers who go nuts customizing their cameras, getting, you know, the latest kit and just putting it all together to do weird things that they want. And there's a lot of, you know, you could picture a hacker doing all the same things to his computer and gadgetry. It's kind of the same same attitude.
Ask Lex. We've got a photographer.
Oh, he's in the room. There he is. Okay. Yeah. There's so many people here, I can barely see everybody. Go ahead, Lex.
What's the question?
Oh.
forget about it.
Yeah. We're talking about photography.
Yes.
And I forget what the question is. But
I like taking things apart to see how they work, and you can do that a lot with images mm-hmm. and storytelling and video and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Mitch?
Yeah, hacking is about just about any realm that people are into, and there are geeks in all these different realms, including photography. At Noisebridge, there's a lot of people who have been doing photography all our lives, including me, and we have a dark room, and there's a bunch of hackerspaces with dark rooms. There's definitely a correlation with hackers and photography, as well as hackers and video and music and cooking, you name it.
Speaking of music, Gus, tell us how the music went.
I think it went quite well. I mean, the great thing that I've been saying since before the concert is that the 8-bit community is incredibly self-organizing. So we sort of said to them, you know, oh, you know, you guys, we'd like to have a couple artists. And they're like, okay, we've got a total lineup and all our visualists are ready and we have all our equipment. We'll bring all our equipment and just tell us where to plug in. And I was sort of floored by that. They did a great job. But, you know, we love them because they not only are working at the really nitty gritty level of like sound waves and then the circuit benders are working with actual, you know, bending wires and things like that. But they're also the vast majority, I think, of the 8-bit musicians release in Creative Commons. And so we had them there. They played their music, sold a little merch, which is how they support themselves. And it was really great. People told me that you can't get hackers to dance. And we had some incredible dancers out there. This is a couple guys I was just like, I was like, how did you learn to dance? He's like, I taught myself. Just fabulous. It was great.
And we actually streamed it out, and we actually had a really interesting number of listeners.
Radio Statler was incredible this year. I was able to actually listen to parts of the conference from other parts of the hotel and find out what was going on that way as a real information source. But you guys, you had a whole lot of listeners this time.
We had almost 2,000 unique listeners this time, which was a big jump over last time. We had a little hiccup. We probably could have hit over 1,000 simultaneous listeners, people listening at the same time at during the WikiLeaks keynote. Unbeknownst to us, when our server reset the night before our streaming server, it reset down to the default number of listeners, which is 300.
Uh-huh.
So
the trials and tribulations.
Yes, we did not realize that happened. So it got reset, but we actually, it was an immense success this time. I mean, we had a lot of interesting people come out.
Do you remember how many countries they came out of again? I forget.
I'm not sure. I know we hit at least 4 continents, but I'm not sure exactly how many countries we had. The guy who has that info is Nick Gudd, who is still trying to decompress and get everything moved down to D.C. So
a lot of decompressing going on. Of course, you'll have the archives.
Actually just were able to pull it off of the machine last night. We found the machine.
There's a lot of where's my machine going on.
we lost the machine and we refound it. We uploaded the full stream last night. We're breaking it up because unfortunately right now the way the software we're using did it, it breaks it up in weird blocks. So we have to edit it all together to do individual shows.
Mm-hmm.
But that should be up within a week or so. Okay. And that'll be up on the Statler website, radio.hope.net.
All right. Now, who are you pointing to, Nick? Oh, okay, Gus. I can't see you. You're so far away.
I know I'm like behind everything, but you'll have at least one listener in Africa. I was talking with my boyfriend who's doing tech teaching in Cameroon, and he was like, "Oh, I've got to listen to that," because he's a huge fan of the 8-bit scene, and he was bummed that he missed the concert. So.
Well, hopefully, he turns people in Cameroon onto it as well.
Yeah, yeah,
that'd be cool.
He probably got us that continent at the very least. I know we we definitely got Europe. I believe we got South America and Asia. Obviously, North America, and I think that Africa was the last one we got. I'm not sure.
He hasn't listened to it yet, so I don't know. I would bet that we must have had some people in Australia, right?
Yeah, I think we did.
We had people in real life from Australia.
We did.
How could we not have virtual people from Australia?
You really have to hand it to people who are coming from Australia, because they have to shell out to get here.
Go ahead, Barney.
I just want to say, you're mentioning listeners in other countries. The FCC licensed amateur radio station at the Next Hope, the call sign was N2H. We had lots of people surrounding that station and learning about amateur radio. And with just a few watts, about 3 watts of power, we contacted other amateur radio stations in a lot of different countries, like Croatia, France, Hungary, Cuba, Argentina, Canada, and a bunch of others I can't remember. And this was like with as much power as like a nightlight uses to establish data communications with countries on the other, all around the world. And not only that, but people were so inspired by seeing these demonstrations that a bunch of them took the FCC amateur radio exams that we offered on Sunday, thanks to the W3VC volunteer exam team. And I think we had, I don't know if Lindsay's there in the studio, but we've got like 32 people pass the amateur radio exam. Is that right?
Is anybody here to verify that? I don't think anybody knows.
I don't think the people can hear.
Well, of course, there's that problem, too. We wanted to know how many people passed the ham radio test. Does anybody know? I'm sorry, how many?
I heard that 73 took in the
73 took
just
it.
Just about half passed.
About half of them passed. And the ones who didn't pass, we're not mocking any or saying anything nasty about. They can take it again, and eventually they will pass it.
Yep. So it was a lot of fun. We established contacts all over the world with the Next Hope. And it's funny, some people who contacted us knowing what frequencies we'd be on, and we're like 2,600 subscribers, or had been to Hope before but couldn't this time, but they wanted to contact us remotely via the airwaves from around the world. So it was a lot of fun, and it's just amateur radio is like one of the oldest forms of communications hacking in existence. For over a century, people have been doing this kind of stuff, so we hope to bring that back to the next Hope.
And Bernie, do you happen to know how many QSL cards we're sending out?
I think over 100. We gave a lot of them away at the conference from people who brought their portable ham radios and established contact with the N2H station right there. So we filled out the cards and gave them.
Hold on a second. You mean you can walk up to a ham radio station and get a QSL card that way? I thought you had to listen on the radio to get one.
No, you do. People brought their portable, their what are called handy talkies that operate on multiple VHF, UHF bands, and you can just call. You could just call on the radio. It's still establishing radio contact with the station, but then they would just walk up and say, "Hey, can we get our card?" But a lot of stations were around the world, and we will be mailing those cards out. I think overall, well over 100 QSL cards will be sent out. These are like little postcards that the amateur radio stations send to each other after establishing contact. And this year they were designed by the renowned hacker graphic novelist cartoonist Ed Piskor, who did a fantastic job with the design. So thanks, Ed. And these cards are going to go out in the mail sometime soon.
I was just going to say, I'm not impressed by people who contacted you from across the room. I could do that just by shouting. I could shout legally.
You didn't do it through the radio wave, so, that's
he's doing it through the radio waves now.
I'm talking to you in Philadelphia. It's like magic.
Okay.
Speaking of magic, artwork, we had a lot of art displays at the conference, and I know Rob T. Firefly, you were involved in part of that. Lex, you were involved in part of that. Do you want to tell us how that went and what was involved?
I think we had a neat theme this time around, which was sort of the retro-futuristic Fritz Lang's Metropolis-inspired, World's Fair-inspired sort of the future from the past. And I think we did a pretty good job of getting everyone who was working on these things together and sort of doing their own things, but within the theme. So we had a sort of cohesive show for people.
I really hope we can get a lot more artists involved next time.
Yeah.
We started out with 3 working on it, and we ended up with about 10 working on it in the end, and we should have had 100 piling in. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to push for getting more people involved next time.
Yeah, and we also had some brilliant installation art, which was who was in charge of that?
Derevin got it rolling, and then I kind of
Sabrina took over.
Yeah,
at the conference.
Yeah, Sabrina took over and got them to all their spots, and I pulled a couple extra ones in at the last minute there. So
also, there was a bit of audience participation. I liked. My artistic partner Gray, she had set up this sort of model cityscape that you saw right when you came up the escalator, and so you had these buildings sort of poking out of clouds and things with a zeppelin hovering over them. At some point during the conference, somebody made a paper craft dinosaur and had him marching along the buildings in and I think that was really cool, and I think Gray kept the dinosaur.
Was it a steam powered dinosaur?
No, it was just a regular paper powered dinosaur.
It was real retro.
Yes.
Nick.
Well, I just wanted to echo what Lex was saying and give a warm thanks to Sabrina, who took over and helped take care of the artists throughout there. And also, just in the art, I think this year there was a lot more ELY, a lot more traditional hacker craft involved, at least in the artwork that I saw this year. And I perhaps think that might be directly associated to the sorts of things that we had going on last year. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to see that.
There was a one installation in particular. I cannot remember the fellow's name who did it, but he had an EL wire model of an animation of Martin Luther King Jr.'s face, which was lip synced in time with one of his recorded speeches, and it was really something to behold, especially for someone with interests in sort of digital puppetry and animation. I think, and I wish I could remember his name.
It was really complicated how he achieved that. Yeah. I, at first you thought it was, oh, that's pretty simple. He's just, got it lip-syncing to whatever sounds are coming up. But no, I mean, he was actually making the phonetic movements of the lips and making the eyes move, and it was amazing.
And it's already all over YouTube.
Of course, it wouldn't be a whole conference without segues. We had those running day and night. And I want to call upon two people, Fiber and Kyle, who both rode segues for the first time ever in their lives. I was so impressed, especially with you, Fiber, how we had a guy there who was so good at calming people and instructing them on how to ride the thing safely. And you were very hesitant at first. And within 10 minutes, you were riding the thing like a champ.
Yeah, I think even less than 10 minutes. Uh-huh. I was a little nervous getting on it at first. I wasn't expecting it to be moving on its own when I was trying to step onto it.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed very unnatural. I didn't like the feeling.
Yes.
But after a few minutes, yeah, it's true. You kind of get used to you find your balance. You find your center of gravity. And then you could just dart off on the thing.
Mm-hmm. And you were darting all over the place.
Yeah, it's extremely accurate. It really sharp turns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Kyle, how about you?
I had the same reaction initially. It was like very awkward to get on, and because you would make sudden motions and it would move you forward or backward, and it was very wobbly for me at first. But I got to the point, like, I was so comfortable. It's like pretty much you think you want to go in a certain direction, and you sort of lean a little bit and you trust it, and it just takes you off. It's very bizarre, but I got really, really comfortable with it in as much time, 5-10 minutes.
I would just like to add that the first time I rode a Segway was several hopes ago, I think maybe the fifth hope. And I rode the Segway for the second time in my life at the next hope, and the Segways we had were a lot better, so it was a lot more fun to ride.
Well, maybe you're just a lot better at riding them.
Perhaps.
Yeah, it's an acquired skill. But I was just so impressed with the professionalism of the people that we had showing attendees how to ride these things safely and enjoyably, and it was just a great experience for one and all. Dotrat.
Yeah, we were kind of required to, and I would like to say that a good amount of that actually goes to the guys who were so kind enough to even provide the Segways to us. Mm-hmm. They were there showing all of us exactly things that, many of us had actually ridden Segways before, but he mentioned some things that even veterans from the last hope didn't really think about, and mm-hmm. then they were able to pass that knowledge on, and I think that helped make it go a bit more smoother than it might have otherwise.
And of course, we have to give all kinds of credit to our security team, who really faced a challenge this year and met it admirably with imagination and kindness and all the things that you need and people who are keeping us all safe, and they did a fantastic job with some really, really strange circumstances and situations. Who wants to speak to that? There's a lot of pointing going on. You're pointing at each other. Okay, Alessio.
From an European point of view, it's very strange for me to see Segways going around in a conference. And really strange thing was that near the Segway there were the lockpicking village, so there was something so old in the roots of our culture, and near there people going around with something that seems arriving from the future. So it was really cool.
It really was. Now, okay, let's get to, I guess, what was the major attraction for many of the people who came to the conference, the talks. We had over 100 talks, well over 100 talks, if you include the unscheduled track. Anybody want to mention favorites or most notable ones? Mike?
We had 2 talks on food this year.
Okay, we did.
Which is good, because in the past we've had one.
At least two that dealt directly with food. I'm sure others mentioned.
Well, 2 talks that were in the program that had the word food in the title.
Mm-hmm. We had the Gweeds talk, and we had Cooking for Geeks, I believe.
Yeah, where I guess cooking is almost a synonym of food in the title. So I think that's good. We should have more next time.
Okay, that's something.
Gweeds' project, he has a new project that I didn't know about before. It's called the Food Genome, and it can analyze basically the things you're eating, the things you like to eat, and suggest recipes and modify recipes for you in ways that will make you like them better. But it's been so popular since his talk that it's been down.
Okay.
It's very sad. I want to see it when
that
it's
does
up.
Happen. Voltaire.
We also had no talks on Eagle, so I think that was equally good.
Okay, well, I'm sure you'll be getting email about that from those fine folk. Gus?
I thought you said eagles for a second there, and I was going to say again, bat echolocation! And the bat echolocation talk was everything I hoped for. The guy was talking about the shape of brain cells, and he was talking about, you know, he's showing us beautiful pictures of sort of like spectrograms and this great, he had some video of a bat flying through the dark and stuff like that. And that was really a cool talk if you just wanted to sort of get like a quick introduction to a really cool science thing.
Now, Kyle, I know that you mentioned to me a talk that you saw that you really liked a lot about chemistry. You want to tell us something about this?
Yes. It was she was a pharmacist, and she was talking about biochemistry and her experience studying chemistry, and she was so sweet. She had just a really good personality. She was very, very nervous, and I had just spoken, and I thought I was nervous, but she was, you know, doing a great job in the face of kind of this daunting public event. And basically,
she actually had things bubbling up on stage.
Yeah, she was explaining solubility and giving this great crash course in chemistry. And she had this awesome concoction of vinegar, ink from a Sharpie, and turpentine. And then she added soda ash to it, and it like started foaming and bubbling all over the stage, all over the table. And like one of the security guys was so gracious, dove in with paper towels to help her, and she was just like, you know, going on with like what she had just done and sort of ignoring the huge like foaming mess she had made. But it was beautiful. She was so beautiful in that.
Hardly wait to see the video of that. That's just a very small sampling, Mike.
And this reminds me that one of the things several of the speakers told me is that they really liked our audience. A lot of them weren't from the community, didn't know what to expect from a room full of hackers, and they were all very pleased, or mostly all very pleased, with the reception they got from the community, so I think that's good.
We had the best audience in the world, I think, and that was proven so many different times. Nick, do you have something?
Oh, I was just going to, if we're talking about talks,
yes.
Steele went until 8:05 in the morning for a record 7 hours and 5 minutes.
Robert Steele really set all records this time, and I'm hoping that we got it all on video. That's going to be one hell of a premium when we offer that.
Yeah, we were actually downstairs on Statler while we had one of the shows going on watching, and a couple of our people went upstairs to start jumping in and asking random questions that tried to stump him on things, and he got every single one of them.
A one-man filibuster, unbelievable. Wow, okay, that's great. I hope he made it home safely. And
he's actually still there talking.
Oh, he could be. No, he could be.
No, that's not true. He got in his car immediately after talking for 8 hours and drove somewhere, and I don't know about
he's
that.
He's still talking somewhere.
Maybe, yeah, that.
Wow. Okay, now, the big talks, the ones that got all the attention from the media. We had the, Julian Assange didn't show up. He didn't do the Skype thing. He didn't do a pre-recorded thing. Instead, we had Jacob Applebaum, a WikiLeaks representative from the United States, give a rather long and spirited keynote address, which people seem to be quite pleased with. And of course, our security team once again proved itself by, Jacob was very concerned. In fact, a lot of us were very concerned about how the federal authorities might react. There were federal authorities there, quite a few of them. They came early on Friday demanding access, and our security team said, either you have a warrant or you pay for a ticket. They paid for tickets, but they were wandering around. Awesome security and registration people really standing up. They basically wandered around the entire weekend. Jacob was very concerned after his talk, where he reveals himself as a WikiLeaks person, and of course we know they want to talk to Julian Assange very, very badly. How is he going to safely get out of the building? He actually had a flight out of the country scheduled out of Newark Airport for immediately after his talk. They worked it out so that if you were watching on stage, you saw somebody who looked like him leaving. It wasn't him. It was a fake. And he left through a different door, got out safely, while everybody followed this fake person down to the lobby, press, attendees, feds. And when he took the hoodie off, I believe the truth was revealed, and they were rather upset. Is that an accurate summation?
Yeah, as I was one of the three people who actually was with Jacob in getting him out of the building. As soon as he walked off stage, he and his friend were changed into security shirts, and we just wandered out through Lovelace, and no one paid any attention because we had been going through the entire time yelling at people about sitting in aisles because Lovelace was so overcrowded to the point where other people sitting there were like, if something happens, can we get out?
we had four rooms packed for that keynote.
Everything. We actually had to shut down Lovelace because of how overcrowded it got. And
that wasn't even the room that the talk was taking place in. That was an overflow room. We had two overflow rooms on the 18th floor and one downstairs on the second floor. They were all packed.
Yeah, and we just walked out through Lovelace, right back to the freight elevator, walked downstairs. Now, no one paid any attention at all, and I got to see Warlord actually was the guy who has a similar build. When he hopped backstage, he threw on a hoodie.
Nice.
The security guys, escorted him out, and they said literally there were people they were playing Spot the Fed earlier, and three of the people who were tagged followed them downstairs. And when he walked outside and pulled the hoodie off, they kind of just took off in one other direction.
Yeah, they really thought they were on. And, of course, the security team, Big Frank and Rhodey, they know the catacombs of the Hotel Pennsylvania better than anybody. They can go down those freight elevators and go down secret corridors and work their way into any part of the building very quickly. So a big advantage there. Nick?
Well, I was actually unwittingly recruited into the two false flag operations that happened, the first of which involved two random girls from Iceland who were surrounded by security people coming out of Tesla, very obviously, and then thrown into an elevator. Rhodey just came up to me at the very last minute and said, Nick, go hold an elevator. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do that. 2 minutes later, this pile of small cadre of humanity comes, boom, rushing into the elevator along with the reporter that I was trying to link up with Jake so that she could interview him on the way out to the airport. And then that happened. I was asked to hold another elevator, and I saw the Warlord false flag operation happen after that. So I got in on the two false Jake Applebaums, missing the real one.
I guess we used you as bait to sort of fool people.
You know, suits attract other suits.
Yeah.
I thought that was the option.
I've noticed. Now, the panel discussion that everyone's talking about now, the big controversial story involving WikiLeaks, involving Adrian Lamo, involving hackers, we had Fiber Optic, we had Bernie S., we had Kevin Mitnick all on the same panel, and then we brought Adrian Lamo up. And I got to give credit to our crowd for being respectful, even though some of them disagreed so strongly, and some of the people on the panel obviously did with Adrian's actions. But they listened. They listened to what he had to say. They asked him pointed questions, intelligent questions. And any judgment that you've arrived at based on that is something that you thought about. It's not just blindly following. And that's really what I wanted to accomplish with this, was to simply give people the opportunity to not read about it in Wired or some other place, but to confront it head on. And we had that opportunity because all the players were involved in HOPE. And I'm really proud of our audience for doing this. They were a model for any democratic society and how you should deal with controversy.
We had IRC on, and we were chatting with people on the 2600 IRC network, and everyone was convinced that as soon as Adrian hit the stage, that something crazy was going to happen. People were going to mob him. Mm-hmm. People were going to start throwing things. And watching how professionally all of the attendees act, and how, while some of them were very upset and some of them were very aggressive, they were still very polite, and none of them were – rude. None of them, made threats. And everybody was blown away by just how well it went.
Yeah. And that is why we do this, because of that crowd, because of that level of intelligence. That's the inspiration, Rob.
Yeah. And I really got to thank you guys all for putting that together and making that happen, because one of the things I've been saying about this case since the start is, you know, what information have we had? We've had one Wired article. We've had, stuff from Adrian's own press releases and things like that. But, the hacker way is to look for more data, and we desperately needed more data on this, and I think you succeeded in getting us toward that.
Fiber.
Yeah, I was actually a little worried because he was sitting next to me. I was actually worried I was going to get splattered with brain matter or something as soon as he sat down, because the crowd was a little rowdy before they calmed down a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were obviously emotional about what had happened, and we're not going to go over the whole story again. We've gone into it so many times, but suffice to say, there were the main players in a very controversial story that's been taking place throughout the last few months. And it was all there. And rather than avoid it, we plunged into it. And I think that's what hackers do. They plunge into the fire, so to say. Yeah. Bernie, how about your feelings on this?
I want to thank you also for putting this panel together and for getting Adrian to speak at the last minute. Some new information was aired that had not been reported in any of the commercial media outlets. And it was really a very thorough airing of the issues that hasn't occurred in any other medium yet about this particular topic. I also want to mention that one HOPE attendee, a woman who wishes to remain anonymous, she made up a whole bunch of picture postcards available for other HOPE attendees to fill out with best wishes for Bradley Manning, the young Army intelligence worker who is right now in a military brig in Kuwait, for the foreseeable future, for doing what he felt was his civic duty, only to be turned in by Adrian Lamo. And I think nearly 100 people filled out these postcards with their best wishes, what she's going to mail to Bradley Manning. And I am certain, having been in that position before, I'm certain that these messages from supporters will boost his spirits, which I'm sure he needs right now. Hello?
I hear that, Bernie. I agree with Rob as well, and that's sort of been my position, is we need to be very sensitive to this and actually have a dialogue. And I want to acknowledge and commend Emmanuel, not condemn, commend you, because there was a lot to plunge into coming at you from all sides, and you did face it head on, and the community faced it. And you really made good on your promise, and I think everybody got their tickets worth out of this, because that's the dialogue we needed to have, and I've gotten a better sense of the entire issue, and I'm not hearing it from rumor or from whatever someone else's opinion is, and so I just wanted to acknowledge you.
Well, thanks, but how do you guys feel that it went discussion wise? Do you feel that any minds were changed? Did Adrian present a case that tell you anything that you didn't already know?
I'm disappointed that I know now just as much as I did before. I was hoping that he was going to do a better job of explaining why he did what he did, but after his lengthy explanation, it's exactly the situation that I thought it was, and I think he really misled people who gained his trust. He misrepresented himself as a journalist in order to gain that trust. Mm-hmm. And the story is as it is. I think that he should have just walked away.
Nick?
I disagree on one point. I think anybody who was there and saw how he behaved during the weekend and had any personal interaction with him could see that it was what he did was purely self-serving.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
I mean, okay. that I think the way he acted at the conference removed any doubt of that, that there was no... that. People who call him a hero. I mean, that you can view his actions as heroic if that's the way you feel, but just interacting with him throughout the course of the weekend,
it was
clear that... Do you want
to be more specific as to what you mean by the way he acted?
No, everything that he was doing there was incredibly self-serving. It was the Adrian Lamo show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It wasn't about him trying to open up a dialogue or explain things or to try to convince people of his point or to try to interact there, but it was all like, I'm Adrian Lamo, give me stuff.
Uh-huh.
And look at me.
Like a reality TV show star.
I was actually concerned that he was going to provoke security to the extent that they'd throw him out and he'd turn that into a media event, that he was ejected from the conference.
He tried. Yeah. He tried several times, and it's a credit to our security team that they didn't buy into it.
All right. Well, let's not make this all about one person. Gus, you have...
Well, I think this is sort of interesting, not to defend what he did specifically in terms of portraying himself as a journalist, but what we're in right now in terms of journalism is a very strange moment where journalism itself is changing a lot. I mean, Chris Anderson did his talk on how journalism is now sort of increasingly keyword-driven. The professional status of journalists is changing a lot. A lot more casual people are able to step into journalism. A lot of existing journalists are burning out. And so there's going to be this sort of zone where people can take advantage of, you know, being able to deceive people like that. And we might see a lot more of things like that, and we should be careful about that.
Go ahead, Rob.
I'd just like to say that, anyone who did witness his actions at the con and at this at this panel, now you can come by your opinion honestly, and that's important.
That is important.
I know that everyone's focusing on, Lamo on this and everything, but I'd actually like to say that seeing everyone else talk, everyone else that was up there talking and going through their stories and everything and their thoughts, and I thought that was actually the best part of the panel.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it was certainly interesting, and I know Fiber, you, Bernie, Kevin, you all told stories beforehand. In fact, we had a long conversation, maybe about 45 minutes, 50 minutes of just you guys telling what had happened to you in the past, and it made us all realize that people turning into informants is nothing new for the hacker community. This is something that happens all the time. In your particular case, you not only had somebody inform and get federal authorities on you and later turn into the editor of a hacker magazine, namely Frack, and not really get any condemnation from various people in the hacker community, but in addition to that, you had two people within the hacker group you were in, Masters of Deception, also turn into informants. So I think that illustrates how pervasive this is, how this is a problem we really have to deal with. People who feel the need to turn on their friends and get them into far more trouble than they certainly deserve to be in just to save their own asses.
I think that the details of the actual people having turned informant was really lost in the noise of the great hacker war that was created by the media.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about LOD versus MOD.
Yeah, the LOD
war
versus
that never actually
MOD
happened.
Thing, which never really occurred. I mean, we're always friends on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike.
Yeah, we're running out of time, but I just want to point out that there's a sort of difference between the Manning case and some of the other cases where Tor mentioned, which is that Lamo himself was not under threat. He was asked several times specifically, did you do this because you were afraid you would get found out and thrown into jail? And he said no. So I think there's a difference between turning an informant to save yourself and turning an informant just because. And I think that's interesting.
All right. We could talk about this for hours, and no doubt we will continue talking about it. The aftermath continues. We will have audio available online fairly soon. We'll have videos available shortly after that. But I really want to thank all you guys for your part in this conference. It did an amazing job. It was a pleasure working with each and every one of you. And I also want to thank the audience, of course, the Hotel Pennsylvania, all the people walking by in the street who gave us curious glances. It was magic. It really was. For those of you in New York City for the first time, wow, it must have been quite a trip for you. Nick, any final words?
Kenny, Jerry from the hotel, thank you so much. You guys are great all weekend.
Yeah. And
save
hope
Hotel
to,
Penn.
Yeah, save Hotel Penn, please. We'll have more information on that. We can join the many, many people who signed the petition to keep the place from being destroyed. We'll have more information on that in future weeks. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll see you next week.
Hey everyone, listen up your attention if you please. We wanna give you a warning, cause I found out this morning about a dangerous, insidious computer virus. If you should get any mail with the subject stinky cheese, better not go taking the chances. Under no circumstances should you open it, or else it will translate your documents into Swahili, make your TV record cheese. Your laundry static clean. Look out, it's gonna make your computer screen freeze. Look out, erase the Easter eggs off your DVDs. Look out, erase your hard drive and your backups too, and the hard drive of anyone related to you. Virus alert, you need immediately before someone gets hurt.
gonna melt your face right off your skull.
Look out!
And make your iPod only play Jethro Tull.
Look out!
And tell you knock-knock jokes while you're trying to sleep.
Look out!
And make you physically attracted to sheep.
Look out!
Steal your identity and your credit card.
Look out!
Buy you a warehouse full of pink leotards.
Look out!
Then cause a major rift in time and space and leave a bunch of tweaky rappers all over the place.
Let's write it some virus alert.
Cheat lead immediately before someone gets hurt. Forward this message on to everybody.
Virus alert.
Cheat lead immediately before someone gets hurt. Forward this message on to everybody. Warn all your friends, send this to everybody. Tell everyone, you know, tell everybody now. If you get infected, you'll wish you had never been born. So before it emails your grandmother all of your porn, turn off your computer and make sure it powers down. Drop it in a 43-foot hole in the ground. Bury it completely, rocks and boulders should be fine. Then burn all the clothes you may have worn anytime you were alive.
Virus alert.
You need immediately before someone gets hurt. Forward this message on to everybody.
Virus alert.
You need immediately before someone gets hurt. Forward this message on to everybody.
Virus alert.
You need immediately before someone gets hurt. Forward this message on to everybody. Warn all your friends.
Virus alert. Ha 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 ha. WBAI. Yeah. Wow, man. They must have had 200, 300, 400 people in here for that show. I lost count after 27. All right. You know, it's 8 o'clock here at WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It is July the 21st, the day after National Lollipop Day. And Wednesday, and it's time for the personal computer shoe.
Ooh. Well, welcome to the Personal Computer Show. In the background, I hear the dulcet tunes of the One Hole Stomp. So it must be us. We're back again with you. Hanky, my co-host, is with me tonight. Tonight is July something or other.
You know, tonight is July 21st. And Stevie said that yesterday was National Lollipop Day.
Yes, it was.
Did you know what yesterday was, Stevie?
Yes.
What was it?
National Lollipop Day.
No, yesterday was July 20th, the 41st anniversary of what?
41st anniversary.
What happened July 20th, 1969?
Oh, when we went to the moon.
You mean that was less important than lollipop?
Hey, tell me, how often do you go to the moon? How often do you have a lollipop?
According Alice to the moon.
Yeah, Alice goes.
With Jackie Gleason.
Okay.
Hey, you know, the last couple of weeks we've been asking people to submit what they thought the YLMF, that's a Linux version of where the presentation user interface is Windows XP on top of Ubuntu 10.04. And, in China, this is where it was built, they thought that YLMFU little blankety blank was cool. And a lot of youngsters have flocked to the use of the program because not only is it good, but they like those letters. So we asked people, well, keeping it clean, keeping it original, what do you think YLMF stands for? So we ran a contest, and we have a winner.
We did select a winner.
It wasn't easy, though.
And it wasn't really what I was hoping for, Hank.
Well, right? It came close, okay? The winner was Frank Zellner, and he's in North Arlington, New Jersey, and his winning entry was Yesterday's Linux Made Familiar. And that's what the product is. It's, in other words, it's today's, Linux 10.04, made to look like Windows XP.
I'll tell you the truth. The one that I wanted to give the prize to, Hank said, but that has nothing to do with computers, but it was Yunnan Lobster My Fun.
Yeah, but what does it have to do with computing? It's with
no,
food.
But it's a delicious dish. I mean, oh, well. No, it didn't get the prize.
Now, wait a minute. You know what my fun is, right?
Yes.
What is it?
My fun is a rice noodle, very, very thin. Some people call
with
it vermicelli.
Lobster? Now, when did you have that? With lobster?
Yes. My way of making it is at Yunnan lobster. Oh, I know you prefer Cantonese food, but...
Boy, you'll never make it in a Chinese restaurant as a tourist cook.
I'll make it in a Chinese restaurant.
As a tourist cook.
I'll make it in a Chinese restaurant. I won't make it in a Cantonese restaurant. Yeah. But then some people say the Pearl River doesn't have good food anyway.
Well... the last week we've had some major news about people's operating system. Anyone who's been running Windows XP, Windows 7, Windows 2000, and Joe, this has to do with the zero-day flaw with the file.
The super technology, Stevie will probably agree
Keep
with me.
Keep it simple that people can understand.
Zero-day flaw. What is a zero-day flaw? Why don't they say, hey, this grew up, has been there since day one, and we're very sorry, but if you haven't fixed it already, it's too late.
But this is a serious flaw, okay?
It's a serious flaw because you don't have to do anything. First of all, before I get into the flaw itself, if you just look at it, don't open up anything. Let's say you take Windows Explorer, and in the directory that you're Windows Explorer in, it has one of these things, I'll tell you what they are later. If it has one of these things in it, it's too late because just looking at it in Windows Explorer has exposed your system to it. Let's say that you drive by, you go to a website, and on the page of the website, they have one of these things. Just looking at it through your browser, if your browser is Internet Explorer, that is, just looking at it, it's too late. You've already got it.
By the way, it doesn't have to be Internet Explorer to be affected by this.
Well, actually, Firefox is not affected by this.
No, I'm talking about if you have these files on a pen drive, that's where it could really be affecting
you. It can be. But and the drive-by one, which is different from the other one that we're talking about, you have to do the drive-by in Internet Explorer. And you can go back to Internet Explorer 6. Now, in Internet Explorer 8, there are some protections for you. Not too many, but there are some protections. With Chrome or with Firefox, the drive-by is not working. But let me explain what this whole thing is as best I can, because I really don't – I'm not technical enough to really explain it. But you know those shortcuts you have on your desktop where you can click on a little icon, a little picture of a man in the moon?
I call them link files.
All right.
LNK.
They're LNK files or they're PIF files. We just found out about
PIF are pictures.
No, PIF.
No, I'm sorry. They're not pictures. They're
PIF files are when DOS files are put down
they're
as a shortcut.
They're icon files.
No, PIF files are when DOS files are put down with an icon on the desktop, they use a PIF to get the information from that the LNK file in Windows would have gotten the information from. But these are on your desktop. And when Windows reads them, not when you click them and activate them, but when Windows reads them, if the thing is malformed in such a way, you can get infected.
Well, let's put it this way. A major security organization had published this on July 19th, which is only 2-3 days ago, saying this is a very serious problem. And at that time, they only identified the link files. And then Microsoft yesterday, which was the 20th, made an immediate change. That's how serious it is. In other words, instead of waiting for patch day or patch Tuesday, they didn't care what day it was. They had to get it out as quickly as possible. And they added the PIF files to it because it turns out there was another file that can cause the problem.
Now, let me point out that a lot of us are very fond of saying Microsoft is very slow to react, because this has been going on in Windows as far back as you can think. Windows 2000 had this as a problem. Microsoft would not have come out with this publicly, except that a couple of people came out publicly and said, yes, it's a valid error, it's a valid security breach.
But it's more but than it's, that.
But it's so integral to the mechanics of Windows itself that some people are saying they're never going to be able to fix it. They're going to have to come in with a total change.
But Joe, it's more than that, because it's one thing to say academically what it is, but now they are in Europe. It actually affected machines. In fact, a major German electronics firm the whole system went down on.
Well, Siemens has admitted that this system was used to compromise their password structure, and Siemens is, as you know, a very large firm. The thing I want to point out is right now Microsoft has a workaround. The workaround, I hate that phrase workaround, because the workaround is to turn off the ability of Windows to use these LNK files or PIF files. So they're just shutting it down. But it still has been recommended that I spoke with David Perry, who's really our malware expert here at the station, at the Personal Computer Show. He can't be with us tonight, but he said that they are recommending that everybody make use of this workaround. And since I'd never recommend that people who aren't really heavy hitters go into the registry to do their own editing, Microsoft has come up with what they call a fix-it program, F-I-X-I-T program. If you go to the Microsoft site, www.microsoft.com, and you go to the support section and you do a search for fix-it shortcut, you will be given, as a matter of fact, I'll look it up while we're talking here, but you'll be given a place to go where